Welcome to this special edition of the Strategy Driven Podcast, an interview with Nilofer Merchant, author of The New How, Creating Business Solutions Through Collaborative Strategy. On behalf of the entire Strategy Driven team, I would like to welcome you to this special edition of the Strategy Driven Podcast, an interview with Nilofer Merchant, author of The New How, Creating Business Solutions Through Collaborative Strategy. The Strategy Driven Podcast focuses on the tools and techniques executives and managers can use to improve their organization's alignment and accountability to ultimately achieve superior results. These podcasts elaborate on the best practice and warning flag articles found on the Strategy Driven website at www.strategydriven.com. In this special edition podcast, Nilofer Merchant, Chief Executive Officer of Rubicon Consulting, shares with us her insights on transforming the traditional top-down approach to strategy planning and execution, turning it into a collaborative process proven to be significantly more effective. So now, without any further delays, let's get started. We are privileged to be joined by Nilofer Merchant, author of The New How, Creating Business Solutions Through Collaborative Strategy, and Chief Executive Officer of Rubicon Consulting, a strategy and marketing consultancy designed specifically to serve the needs of technology companies. Nilofer has honed her unique collaborative approach to solving tough business problems while working for and with companies such as Adobe, Apple, Nokia, and HP. Nilofer, welcome to the Strategy Driven Podcast.
So glad to be here.
I'm thrilled to have you on the show. The New How really speaks to the heart and soul of Strategy Driven. And I loved your approach to collaborative business planning. And so I'm thrilled to be able to talk to you today. I think our listeners are in for a real treat.
All right, let's get going.
Well, okay. Hey, well, in the very beginning of The New How, and I loved how you opened the book, you talk about how executives and managers tend to have a different understanding or a different definition of strategy. And as I read that, it rang as being so true to me, because every time I talk with someone different, they always have a different perspective of what strategy means. And so to level set our conversation and set that foundation for our listeners, I was hoping you could tell us what strategy means to you.
Yeah, there's two angles on that question that I want to answer. One is, you know, one person's strategy is another person's tactics. Mm-hmm. And a C-suite thinks about something as a strategy, and then everything sort of beneath them, you know, in terms of who does it, as being tactics. But of course, that can mean that a division leader for a major business unit that can be a, you know, $2 billion business unit is viewed as a tactic, you know, in terms
yes.
of what they do. And so, and as you get cascading through the organization, that applies over and over again. And what I'm finding is companies are doing strategy in terms of which product should we build or which markets can we go after at different levels of the company. And so to say that is considered a tactic, I think diminishes its importance and diminishes your understanding. That's the first thing. Mm-hmm. And the second is strategy quite often is defined as the what, meaning what is that one big idea and can we name it? So we want to go own this particular space or this particular market. It's quite often defined as the strategy. And I've just been really fascinated with the notion of the what is incredibly important, but how we come to it, sort of how do we go about that, is another level of strategy, and we need to really value that part too.
And as I read that in your book, it almost seemed to me also, if I took it down to a personal level, you know, so often we hear Well, I'll say we hear the great leaders say that it's not only important what a person accomplishes, but how they accomplish it. And mm-hmm. that means something too.
Yeah. So in fact, one of the backstories of the book that very few people know is that I was working at a big company and, you know, successful in my own right, running a major part of a division. Mm-hmm. And I got called in by the CEO of the company and got told that she trusted every single thing that I advised her on. And but she didn't trust my how, and neither did the rest of the team that I was working with. And that CEO that told me that, the what and how conversation, was then the CEO of Autodesk. Mm-hmm. And she is now the CEO of Yahoo and has gone on to another career. At the time, I didn't want to believe that, but it caused me to really think about and appreciate more the value of the how. And, mm-hmm. and it put me on this journey of, you know, 10, 12 years later now, actually producing a book and talking about the value of the how. But it started with me really starting with me not appreciating it, right? That I understood, wow, I'm really smart, and let me show you how smart I am, was really what I considered to be the sort of premise of great leadership back then.
And, you know, in the new how, you talk about creating business strategy in a collaborative way. I was wondering if you could provide our audience some insight into what that collaborative process looks like, and include in that picture some of the roles that various members of the organizations would have in executing that process.
So there's three probably to talk about there. One is, when we're talking collaborative, we're talking not kumbaya and not consensus and not coordination, right? So I'm being really clear about what I mean by collaboration. Collaboration is really co-laboring towards a common goal. It's much more like what movie production looks like today, where teams of people come together, the best theatrical artist with the best funder, with the best, et cetera, come together to come create something together. We need to think about co-laboring in that way. So the first part about collaboration is the mindset, right? How do we come to it, as each of us come to it? So we step into the game and kind of recognize that we all have a role to play. Mm-hmm. Means we have to change the dynamics, right? The power dynamic inside an organization. The second thing is really just the process by which people, there's method, Nathan, you're probably going to dig into later in this podcast, is the quest process.
Mm-hmm.
Quest is to really have a way to question what the problem is, envision the options, select amongst those options, and then to take responsibility, each of us, for figuring out how to go do that rest of the piece. And the third piece of the collaboration is really thinking about, how do we culturally enable all of us to have the rules and rewards in the business, reward collaboration rather than competition.
Now, Nilofer, you talk about involvement of members of the organizations that hold, I'll just describe them as lower positions. So outside the executive team, outside the management team, and having them involved in development of the business strategy. Mm-hmm. What is the benefit that an organization derives from pulling in those other members of the organizations to the planning process?
Yeah, so involvement is about, you know, most of us right now don't have a full picture of what's actually broken or what's going on in the business. That's just mm-hmm. the reality of how fast our businesses are growing. And so the question is, who else knows something about what's actually going on? What can we do that we need to involve in understanding the situation more fully, right? Because if we don't understand it fully, we're never going to solve it well. So involvement starts with that. And the second part of involvement is, it's actually saying, okay, so once we've decided, you know, people who are going to go make it happen. So if mm-hmm. they didn't actually believe in or participate in the process itself, how will they actually know the why of what we're doing? Not just go do this, right? But I understand what it was that forced us to go make that decision. And then I can go figure out how to go make that specific action happen.
Right. So not only do they have the buy-in, but now they're mm-hmm. armed with having the knowledge to make the decisions that they're empowered to make every day and ensure those decisions then are aligned with the business strategy.
You know, it's really funny. For the last 20 years, Nathan, we've had this conversation going on in management books about how we have a very creative, knowledge-based workforce.
Mm-hmm.
And
yes.
yet all of our management practices are really not tapping into that creativity and knowledge of that person.
Yes.
And that's just the bottom line reality. And I'm like, okay, so my fundamental assumption is that if we have really smart, talented, creative people in our organization, why aren't we asking them for what the problem is, asking them to come up with the answer, and asking them to go make that real?
And who better to know than the person who's actually dealing with the problem on a day-to-day basis as to what's wrong and how best to fix it?
And the flip side of it, is right now leaders have so much stuff going through their desk, and everyone's complaining about it. I'm hearing leaders at all these different levels say, oh, my God, the amount of decisions I'm being asked to make. And I'm like, yeah, but you're the one who's teaching the whole organization that you're the one who needs to make that decision. Why don't you just shout it back out the business and say, you go make that decision, right? So we have a dilemma in our business, which is we have to make way more decisions that we've made before.
Mm-hmm.
We have our businesses need to be way more nimble. We're much more porous in terms of how we interact with our market. So why not figure out how to get the sort of edges of the nodes, you know, the people in the business who are actually dealing with things, doing and making decisions where it needs to happen.
And the businesses I've worked with, the ones that are successful in doing that are the ones that are in an overall perspective, whether you want to talk about profitability or you want to talk about worker engagement and their productivity levels, they are just simply the more successful businesses.
Yeah, they're more fun to work at too.
Absolutely. Now, we keep, or maybe it's me, I just keep referring to the strategy development as a process. Is it important to have it as a defined process? And if so, why is it important?
Well, I think you're onto something in terms of it's a process. I think most of us think about, though, the process as being neat. I don't know about you, but when I was thinking about business and certainly going through my business degrees and even my MBA, I kept looking for sort of neat, formulaic sort of answers that if I fill in the SWOT analysis,
mm-hmm.
I'll have an answer. And I think we're trained really to think about the process as being incredibly neat and organized. And in reality, strategy is this incredibly messy exercise of figuring out not only what is it we want to do, but what is it we can do.
Mm-hmm.
And therefore, you know, that sort of variation of options and stuff. So I think we need to think about it as a process, but a messy process. And then how do we have it happen much more like a living, breathing organism? Right, where you can kind of figure out what do you need to take in, what do you need to process on, what do you need to exclude and you know take out, and how does that system sort of start to organically act so because it knows what the right answer is.
And, of course, the market environment around us is so fluid and so rapidly changing
today. It's
going
to necessitate this change. And yet, have you, I mean, Nathan, you're dealing with business every day. Are you seeing people act in this sort of fluid, nimble way right now? Or are you still seeing a pretty hierarchical approach to strategy creation?
You know, the companies I work with, it is still such a hierarchical approach. And try as I might, I have not been successful in the organizations that I've worked with to try to work through a business strategy approach. As much as I've tried to advocate a more collaborative approach, I still see this tight grip around this hierarchical approach. To the point that instead of seeing executives set strategic targets, set the business strategy, what I see is them actually setting the very nuanced project initiatives and sub-initiatives to go after. And it just doesn't get the organization buy-in. And it's, as you've mentioned, you know, people down in the organization then don't know how to make decisions. Because or the ones they do aren't aligned with the strategy, and it's like an organization fighting itself to try to get
things done. You know, it's interesting. The fundamental premise in that is that the idea that somebody owns strategy and somebody owns execution, sort of one group or one entity in the business owns strategy and the other group owns execution. And in fact, there was a wonderful book out about probably now 5, maybe 8 years ago. It's been a little while. Called Execution. And it basically made the premise of, you know, you've nailed the strategy and if only your business could execute right. And that, you may have read that book. And the book actually in some ways infuriated me to no end, I'll have to admit, because it was incredibly well written and articulate and all that.
Yes.
But it basically made this, it made two, right, adversaries.
Right.
And what I think is really interesting in that fundamental bias is, as long as you believe one can then sort of lob over the field, you know, to another party, I think you've set up the construct that's the failure construct. Mm-hmm. And that's why in the new hell, my whole approach is this sort of, we've got to change the whole system. Because we're complicit, we all, every single one of us is complicit in how the system works today. And we have to change the entire system. And that's why we got to think about, how do we all come to the table in such a way that we formulate the strategy and own it and stop thinking about it as this artificial exercise of, there is a strategy and then there is a group that executes.
Right. The biggest wall I see set up, when we establish the group that does strategy, the excuse is that, well, other people can't possibly understand how this is done. And that's our excuse for keeping them separate in some little box.
Yeah, you know, and I understand why we did that in a day when majority of the people, let's say, were building cars out on the production force or whatever. But we're living in an incredibly creative era today where the talent we have can actually do the direction setting for us and with us. And so for especially the older companies that are really struggling in making this move, it's the biggest risk they have. Because they're taking an old approach to a new problem.
And there was a concept, and I'd never seen this before, but you called it being the chief of answers.
Mm.
And when I read that, to me, that's what these old companies hold on to, is senior level folks wanting to be this chief of answers. Could you tell our listeners what you mean by being a chief of answers, and then again why it's harmful to the organization?
Yeah, you know, I had a again in my own story, right, that I told you where I was a sort of up and coming sort of executive, and I thought my role was to know more, and that is exactly the fundamental bias that most leaders, in fact, get promoted, and they think their job is to know more and to be really smart and sort of fast on their feet and all those things. But it's really funny because it actually becomes an Achilles heel.
Mm-hmm.
Because the minute you are the person who is making majority of the decisions and you become what I call the chief of answers, the minute you assume that sort of hat of, you know, chief of answers, it makes everyone else the tribe of doing something.
Yes.
And that's really the problem. Is that the minute you don that hat, the contraposition of everybody else in the room is you get to be the tribe of doing things. And the reality is none of us really want that dichotomy created, but that's what we do. And I was trying to find a term, when I was trying to name it, I was trying to find a term that didn't judge the person right, because none of us are trying to do this thing that's bad. We're actually doing this thing because we're trying to be helpful to the organization, and yet we don't necessarily understand how it just inherently flips every relationship, where then it becomes, then I have to go convince or buy in. And I'm like, no, actually, if you just formulate it differently, which is, we're much more co-creators of this thing, then I don't need to worry about buy-in anymore, right? Because you own it.
Absolutely.
You were there.
Yeah.
And so this whole concept of, we talk a lot in business books about engagement or buy-in. I'm like, yeah, but that's an artificial concept, because when we know when we're at the table. And so all I'm basically saying is invite people to the table.
Mm-hmm. And don't come to them after the fact and tell them, well, here's what you're buying into.
Right. And the thing is that for each of the people who are coming to the table, don't let anybody think that I'm letting them off the hook. The people who show up at the table then suddenly have an expectation too. Right. We get to demand of people that they show up ready to play. You're not there to listen. You're not there to take notes. You're there to play and to help create this thing that can really help, you know, the business grow.
Now, if I'm an executive or a manager, and I've come to recognize that, hey, I am really behaving like a chief of answers, what can I do just to get myself to stop doing that?
Well, I think first thing is about a mindset and to recognize when you're doing it. And then one of the easy tools that you can ask yourself is just to say, I don't know, what do you think? You know, just imagine saying that five times during the day. I don't know. What do you think? And get that person on it and push the answer back in the organization when they say what the answer is. They say, and then you say, wow, that sounds like you should go make that happen then.
Right.
Right. And flip it back into the organization. And it's amazing what happens when you do that. Because all of a sudden that person has onus. They've come up with the answer. They'll go make it happen.
Oh, and they'll be passionate about making it happen.
Won't we all?
Yeah.
Don't we all want to go own the thing? You know, it's funny. Yeah. I'm raising a child right now, so it's interesting for me to watch as a parent how whenever I tell my child what to do, that child typically doesn't do it. And
right.
he spends the majority of his energy then fighting me, right?
Mm-hmm.
But if I say,
mm-hmm.
hey, we have a problem, which is we have to get out of the house at a certain time every morning, what do you think we could do? Then all of a sudden he becomes part of the solution, and he's actually now finding kind of a game out of it to figure out just how much time does it take to do different things and how many different you know, scenarios can he run through. And it's becoming a game, a playful, energetic game where he knows what the problem is and he's going to solve that problem, and we're no longer in a combative relationship. And I find that interesting sort of parallel with business, how we're still telling our people what to do, when in reality those people actually can come up with answers that are sometimes better than the ones we can come up with.
And I think sometimes what we don't recognize is they want to also.
Yeah. You know, you said earlier that you've been interviewing, one of your previous interviews this week was with the Millennium, the M...
The M Factor. Yes.
And, you know, think about the Millennium generation as they come into the workforce where they expect to have a role to play.
Oh,
and that's
absolutely
going to change dynamics, isn't it? That's going to change all of us from a bunch of people who have been like, oh, I'm not really supposed to play that because I'm not allowed. I'm in this role. I'm not allowed. To a Millennium showing up saying, listen, we all got to play because we have a common interest here.
Right. And they are a wonderfully collaborative group. They love to collaborate. And so they'll hop in right away and give you their thoughts. So, you know, something that you stress in the book is that it's important for members of the organization to understand its strategy. And I've seen a host of different ways that organizations have tried to communicate strategy to its workforce. Realistically, what percentage of an organization really needs to fully understand the business's strategy, and why isn't it enough if just the organization's leadership team has that understanding?
You know, there's a piece of research out by Robert Kaplan, and it was published in HBR that said no more than 5% of any organization actually knows the strategy and knows, let alone believes in or cares about and just knows. And I know it's disturbing because it seems to me then 95% of the people are waiting to be told what to do.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Right? And I think that's just a waste of energy and resources in the business if you kind of think about it. Because if I can have 95%, flip the number, 95% of the business people knowing what it is, what we're aiming for, then I don't need to tell you what to do. You can go figure out how fast and hard you need to go pedal, what creative options to come up with, what great deals to go strike, and how to align the 100 things you might do in the course of a year to that top-line strategy. I don't need to even review your decisions. If I have helped you understand your strategy, then you're going to find a whole set of creative options to go align things. And I think that's the big gap in the business right now is with so few people knowing, then the alignment for all the sub-decisions really can't happen.
Mm-hmm.
Right,
absolutely.
Without a lot of review and so on. And then what we sometimes get into is micromanagement or some of the other things that people do to kind of get involved in the business. And the reality is, no, we just need to teach people what matters and why to this business. And they can do the rest and translate that to figure out what is it they need to align.
And I have seen organizations where they have, you know, these big ceremonial type meetings. They hand everybody copies of the business plan, and you know, everyone just puts it on the shelf. But as you described what it looks like, I can remember one organization I went to, and as I walked on site, the executive that was running this facility challenged me to find anybody who did not know what their three goals were. And when I left 2 weeks later, after having interviewed well over 100 people, I could not find anyone that knew exactly what the goals were and how their actions went to support those goals. And it was one of the best running organizations I've ever been to.
Yeah. That's right, because they're highly aligned.
Yeah.
And the thing is, I think majority of this sort of, think about how much money we've been spending as a government and stuff on sort of package work or whatever the heck those, you know, I find those words kind of interesting. But
yeah.
I'm like, there's a stimulus package in our own businesses today, right?
If we
could just figure out how to get people to actually know what matters to this business and why.
Right.
Because all of a sudden, all that sort of wasteful, stupid projects that every business has, you know.
And we all have them.
So I'm not, you know, pointing any fingers in that sense, right? But we all do stupid things, so we're hedging our bets.
Yeah.
And we're sitting there and laying down a whole bunch of dumb bets because we don't know which one really matters. And so we could just improve the efficiency of our own business and the creativity of our own business if we could just align against the right things.
Sure. Now, speaking of that kind of alignment, should goals, performance goals, supporting the implementation of the business strategy be cascaded all the way down into, say, an employee's personal performance goals? And if they should, what might that look like for folks at, say, different levels of the organization?
Yeah, so here's largely how we're doing goal setting and reward systems today. We are largely measuring what Joe or Bob or Rajiv, you know, in whatever world you live in, do in their box. So did Rajiv do what Rajiv was asked to do? And therefore, the goals are largely defined by the role. And yet, what I'm watching businesses succeed and fail at is really about any one particular person not doing their job. Where failure is happening is all the gaps between the jobs. So it's when engineering doesn't build what the customers want, or it's when sales and marketing are not aligned. It's the gaps inside the business, sort of the white space in the business, not the roles themselves. So I think the rewards actually need to be about outcomes, about does that product meet the customer requirements, right? Because then all of a sudden now all the sales team, all the product management team, and the engineering team are all aligned against the same goals.
Okay.
And I think you can tie that down to individual metrics and have people really understand that. But I think we really got to start thinking about the pull through the system, right? Which is,
what's
that outcome we're looking for and how do we reward that rather than, I did my job, and by the way, I threw over the requirements and the MRD over to the product manager. Now it's his job. That does not help us.
Now, there was one statement, and it grabbed my attention, and I absolutely love the statement in the new how. And you noted that it's not the goal of business to win once, it's the goal of business to win repeatedly.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like so many of the conversations I have around business strategy, I would term it as the creation of a strategy in time. In other words, we talk about, well, you know, on an annual basis, we come up with this document. What actions should a leader do to make the business strategy fluid, to make it that living organization or that living thing that we talked about earlier in the podcast so that the organization can really truly keep winning over and over and over again?
Yeah, you know, the difference between an organization's ability to win once, which seems sort of random, you know, like lucky, versus their ability to win repeatedly is the difference between sort of heroic behavior and structural behavior.
Okay.
Heroic behavior says somebody led one particular project team or one particular strategic effort, and through sort of sheer will or sheer good communications or sheer personal leadership, they got that thing over the line.
Mm-hmm.
Structural ability to win is that organization knows how to question what is it we really want to solve, envision options that will really work for our business, not for some hypothetical business. They'll know how to pick and therefore kill off everything on the table that doesn't make sense for them, and they'll take responsibility for crossing the finish line. That quest process that we talked about, that's structural, right? You can come together and formulate and figure out what the right answer is and then go back out and do your thing. And you can do that repeatedly because the organization has this learned ability to challenge one another, to pick the best option, to really add transparency in the business, to create a learning organization. They'll learn all those things if they follow the process tools. And then it's much more about, do we have the ability to do that over and over again? And are we clean about it? It's almost like if you've seen a great couple, if I can tie this back to another personal story, great couples know how to fight there.
Yes.
And if they deal with tough situations, they will never actually destroy the relationship because they know how to fight fair. Mm-hmm. Inside business today, we don't know how to fight fair.
Right. Right.
And so one of the things that you haven't mentioned yet, but I think is really central to the new how approach is murder boarding, which is this approach. You probably had some fun reading that too, right?
Yes, I did.
And murder boarding, because murder boarding is the opposite of whiteboarding, but what it really is this way for us as business people to qualitatively make a tough decision, right? Because if it's a quant decision, it's pretty easy. One number is bigger than another number, done, you know, kind of thing. But most of the business decisions we're making today are these qualitative choices, where it's all this nebulous gray area. And this is a way for a team to fight fair. And to have a set of rules and a way to actually make a tough choice together. And when they learn how to do that, all of a sudden they're going to do great discovery. They're going to turn over a whole bunch of rocks. They're going to learn together. And they're going to know when they walk out of a room, like, why did we pick that? Why did we kill all the other options and why did we pick that? And there's something about that that moves the business much more forward than saying, hey, Bob told us we were going to do option A.
Right.
It just changes the entire dynamic of the business.
Yeah, and when they can have that constructive engagement, I think long-term, it also builds a sense of trust in each other besides a commitment to the answer. And I find trust in an organization is just key to its overall success.
And it's interesting, you know, one of the things when we work with teams, we usually walk in when organizations are struggling, because, of course, you wouldn't bring in an outside advisor if you weren't really needing a tough problem solved. And they're typically adversarial in some way. Because they're dealing with a really tough situation. And when we can help them through this process, and they'll have solved the problem themselves. I mean, we're there, and we're definitely guiding them through and helping them do that. But once they've solved their own process, all of a sudden they have trust for one another again. Because the thing is, you need to have a success. You need to be able to go through that sort of fair fight together and come out the other side, and then you go, oh, I trust you enough to go do it again.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
That's not a course you take on a Friday kind of thing, right? That's when we work together, what does it actually feel like? That's why the new how. I wrote this, I actually think it's kind of an unsexy book in a certain way, and I'm not trying to be disparaging in my own work, but I actually wrote it to help real people solve real problems and to help those teams come together and have some real wins.
Well, and that's what I love about the book. It's not just what you learn about in business school that counts in the real world. It is these sorts of things. It's how people learn how to interact and how to constructively argue and come out trusting each other on the other side.
Yeah.
Now, Nilofer, you closed the new how by presenting several first principles of the new how. I was wondering if you could tell us what they are and then why they're so important for an organization going forward.
You know, I'm going to focus on one for a minute. I'm not going to try to do all five.
Okay. That sounds great.
I'm going to focus on one, which is really about how do we reward co-ownership of something, which is the central notion that really pulls through the new how. So the minute, it starts with each of us. It starts with each of us really thinking about how when we come into any effort, how do we actually be a part of that effort? Not as a person who can shoot it down later, or if this thing's about to fail, I'll run the other way kind of thing. But how do we co-own that success, the outcome of that? And that's really a very, very different stance than most of us necessarily come into a meeting or a project with. And so I think it'll take a little bit of perspective of thinking about how do we, each of us, join an effort? And then we as leaders, how do we enable not just, the leader to have that thriving moment, but how do you actually enable a group of people through a safe construct to actually go through and actually make good decisions, to share power, to vet options, to really challenge each other's thinking? How do you as a leader help manage that energy and to manage the dialogue so that people keep going forward? And then it's as a leader of a whole business, you know, in terms of how we set up rewards, how do I stop focusing on rewarding the person in the box and more about the overall places, the, sometimes I call it the mind the gap, you know, that British phrase, mind the gap. How do we find a way to actually look for the organizational view onto something where we look at outcomes? And so I think it's thinking about co-ownership on multiple levels as people, as systems, and as our reward systems look at, so that we start really coming into work saying, you know, I'm here to help this thing succeed, this larger thing succeed. That was the original goal of what a corporation was, if you remember, that we were supposed to come together and be better for it.
Right.
And yet,
right.
I think the reason why Dilbert's so popular, besides Scott Adams' brilliance, is that it captures the worst sometimes of business, where it's actually become sort of dilutive of people's creative talent. And I think there's an opportunity to return to the best of people's talent again.
Oh, absolutely. Nilla, for before we close, I did want to ask you if you could tell us a little bit about your website, which is www.rubiconconsulting.com. And I've been to your website. I know it has an abundance of additional resources on strategy development and execution. So I was hoping we could just take a moment and I could ask you just to discuss the resources there.
Sure. So Rubicon's been the company that I've been doing strategy at for the last, I founded it now almost 11 years ago. Mm-hmm. And we do strategy for high-tech firms, helping them find and win markets. And we do a lot of commentary about the industry and approaches. So that resource is out there. There's also the newhow.com site, the-new-how.com, which is a book site. And but it's really meant to also be a resource for people to kind of look for skills and stuff, and we're going to keep posting different ideas and tools there.
Great. And I will put links on the article that accompanies the podcast, both to Rubicon Consulting and the New How the Books
Thank
website
you.
As well. So, yeah,
you.
You're welcome. And our listeners then can very quickly get to all these additional resources. Great. Well, Nilufer, I want to thank you not only for sharing your time, but for your insights on collaborative strategy development. And I've said it before, I really enjoyed the New How. And it spoke so much to me because it reinforced a lot of the experiences that I have had and the experiences I've seen others have, and their ability to truly prosper so much more when they get engaged in collaborative planning themselves. I particularly liked also how you clearly defined the roles and responsibilities of both the leaders and the participants of every step of the business planning process. And so I hope our listeners will go and pick up a copy of your book, and then I hope that they'll put the principles and the ideas and the processes that you discuss in the book into practice and create a more collaborative planning and execution environment with their own company, because I know that they'll be just far more successful that way. So thank you again for joining us.
Thank you. It's such a pleasure.
Thank you for joining us. We hope you enjoyed this special edition of the Strategy Driven Podcast. I would like to personally thank Nilufer Merchant for being with us today and sharing her insights on creating robust business solutions through collaborative strategy development. As always, we would appreciate receiving your feedback by email at podcast@strategydriven.com. If you enjoyed the show, please consider voting for us on Podcast Alley and visiting our website at www.strategydriven.com. You can find more information about Nilufer Merchant and The New How at www.rubiconconsulting.com. Until next time, so long.